I'm gonna call Paul and let him know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Hey, Paul, we're good. Take your, relax. We're here, we're in the conference room, and we're waiting for Ron to start till you get here, and Brent is in his office. Oh, wow, okay. Well, we're up at the sixth floor, and I'll let Brent know. Thank you. See you soon. So long. He's here.
Okay. He wasn't tardy.
No, not at all.
I mean, that clock is tardy, or fast, you know. A broken clock is right twice a day. Worst thing is when you come in from the outside when it's this cold, your eyes water.
Oh yeah.
Mine do. Maybe yours don't. But...
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah.
Wait till you get my age. All kinds of things happen.
Shit. Got to tell me. I've already started. Did you see that email I sent to you?
Yeah,
yesterday.
But you know, you sent me the aquarium invoice. It's in Excel.
It's the way. It's however they gave
okay,
it to me.
That's perfect. It breaks it down though. But that is that from CAD?
That's from CAD.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I got.
Yeah,
it. I
you could you can see where it was from him to me.
Right, right.
Then I forwarded it over to Sean Jewers.
Sean Jewers. I got all that exactly.
Right.
I guess I'll keep my hat on because I'm having a hair day.
You're all right.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Paul is on his way up.
I did not know this lady, Mona Greer, but she was a highly regarded woman and an untimely death. She had, I don't know if it was cancer or what, but I often hear about her. Did you know her?
No, Mona. My damn, her name is familiar. When did she pass?
That's a good question.
Well, October the...
Well, that was...
Okay, that's an annual. Okay, no. Yeah. No, I don't believe
but
I
there's an award for her that's given to attorneys.
Really?
Yeah, for sex.
She worked here,
she
obviously?
Did. She was a U.S. attorney, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I believe she was a U.S. attorney, I would think.
Mona. Yeah, that's sad.
Thank you. I know.
Hey, what's up?
Good to see you. Sorry, I'm a couple minutes late.
No,
don't apologize. I don't apologize.
All right, just for introductions, this is Brent Kirkpatrick. He's a TFO with the FBI.
Nice to meet you.
Nice
I'm Tamara Sapp.
Nice to meet you, Tamara.
This is Paul Mothman.
And then on
you
the...
You know Brian Higgins.
No, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, yes, we never met, I don't think, have we?
We have, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Does task force mean you are associated with another agency as
I
well?
I am, yeah. Well, I'm with BCI.
Gotcha.
Ohio BCI, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were in the August 8th meeting.
Correct.
With Cicero.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just the whole mask over the
right,
face
and
thing.
And then I am calling Lance Keppel, who's the case agent, so we can...
Hello.
Hey, Lance, you're on speakerphone here with myself, Kirkpatrick, Paul Loffman, Tamara Sack, and Brian Higgins.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for everybody's participation.
All right. Let's get to it. Do you guys want to take the lead, or do you want us to, or how do you want to proceed?
Well, I guess I can. My request for this meeting is to once again have my meeting up in Chicago and to find out what the status of that meeting is.
Okay. Let me raise several points, if I may. So if you recall, we met back on January, I think
21st, 2020,
correct. Right. You signed a proffer letter that day.
Not the one that you presented, but yeah, I did.
Yes, you did, sir.
No, I didn't. But go ahead. I did not sign a document that had 2021 on it. Never would have.
You did. Okay, well,
we're starting off pretty good. Because I didn't.
All right. So, one, after that meeting, your attorney withdrew from the case. Correct?
I terminated him.
Whatever. Yep. Whatever. He withdrew from the case. He was terminated. Whatever. He wasn't on the case anymore. So you didn't have counsel at that point, correct?
I had...
We had a meeting. Listen to me. We met on January 21st,
yes.
Correct? Within a week or two of that, either you fired or Tony withdrew from the case.
Not true.
Okay? He had indicated to me that he was planning on withdrawing. Anyway, there was a notice on the court's docket in February and or early March that he withdrew. Finally, mm-hmm. Notice to withdraw, okay? So one, we can't arrange anything when somebody is not represented by counsel, okay? So point one. Point number two is that in the interim, when you did not have counsel.
I never had a gap in counsel, just for the record.
You know what, Brian? I really do appreciate how you feel.
Well, I did.
Please, I get that, but please let him finish.
Okay.
Okay? It's, we're going to do call and response.
Okay, first of all, if you look at the court's docket and the way that our court works, is there was a gap in counsel. So the way that it works is that, and again, we may be talking about, coming at it from a different perspective, Mr. Higgins, all right? But Tony files a motion to withdraw. So while there is that motion to withdraw pending, you don't have counsel. The court didn't appoint Ms. Sack at that point. There is an order on the docket that appoints Ms. Sack. So in the interim, there is a hearing that's held where Tony's withdraws, and then the court formally appoints Ms. Sack, okay? Now, it may be that Ms. Sack reached out to you, which is perfectly permissible. It may be that there was a period of time when she was not formally representing you. But the way that it works on the court's docket is there was a motion to withdraw filed. At that point, you're kind of in limbo, because the court had not appointed you new counsel at that point. And I'm happy to pull up the docket sheet at this point if you'd like me to.
No, I mean...
Okay, so this is, again, I'm telling you from my perspective, okay? So you didn't have court-appointed counsel at that point.
Okay.
That I could deal with.
Okay.
In that interim, you filed a lawsuit against two of our witnesses.
Okay.
That
was in March, though.
That was in March, correct.
So we're talking about January.
Meeting January 21st.
Right.
Okay. Shortly after that, Tony indicated to me that he was withdrawing from the case.
Okay.
Okay?
I'm following you.
So at that point, we have nothing that we can, or anybody that we can deal with in terms of representation to set a meeting up, one. Two, I was out of the office for part of February. Okay?
Okay.
Three, we've got the coronavirus starts.
Understood.
Right? Four, you file in March a lawsuit against our witnesses. Okay?
Correct.
Now, I know, I understand your position. You feel like that's a good faith lawsuit. I will tell you, everything about it smacks of retaliation to me. Okay? I have been doing this for almost 18 years. I have never once, ever had a witness sued in a fraud case, in a drug case, any type of case. Your allegations in the complaint, where you out them as informants, there's actually a Sixth Circuit case that says that is retaliatory conduct.
Dayton Daily News outed them as the informant.
Because you gave them the discovery.
That is not true.
Okay?
Well,
Mr.
No.
Mr. Higgins,
just look, please.
Okay, look.
I understand, Mrs.
Look, it doesn't matter whether they did it or not. You put it in a pleading. And you also gave them the discovery in the case, okay? And we know you gave them the discovery in the case because you filed that in this court and the other court, okay? So putting that aside, your allegations in that complaint are false. The very first complaint, you say that they stole $41,000 from you.
Don't say that. Over 30.
No. The first complaint says 40. The second complaint says 30.
Right. No, it doesn't. Your facts aren't right.
All
right.
Mr. Higgins, you know what? We're not going to do this.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm not going to sit here.
Fair enough. Thank you for your time, everybody.
Mr. Higgins, at the end of the day, just so that you know, we contacted FBI Chicago to find out whether or not they'd want to meet with you, and their answer was no.
Well, here, when you had Tyler Freeman, the answer was yes within 2 weeks. Do we want to go up there, or do we want them to come down here?
But what is that? Hold on.
No, it's
what is that? Mr. Higgins, what does that have to do with your case, though?
Oh, you're going to... Everyone will know. Everyone will know. Thank you for your time. Happy holidays.
Don't walk out of that door without a score.
Wait.
You said the meeting's over,
yeah,
so...
I understand that. We have to go with you.
Okay.
Let us get our stuff together.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sorry, I've got this.
Hey, Brian.
I'm just right here at the door. I'm not rummaging.
Just stay in the room.
Do you mind? Thank you.
All right.
Look, I'm gonna just put this on the record. I have no idea what this has to do about trying to resolve this case. It has zero to do with anything. You know, Mr. Higgins, and you know this as well as I do, has no right to meet with anybody at all.
What does that mean?
You have no right for me to set up, or FBI to set up a meeting with any other law enforcement agency. You can make the request, but we have no obligation to honor that request. And we can have reasons why we don't.
Fair enough.
And I am happy to lay those reasons out for you. You can disagree with those reasons, but those are our reasons.
Understood. Okay? Understood.
And I guess what I still can't wrap my mind around, and I'm happy to listen as to why, you repeatedly indicate that somehow this matters, this makes a difference in your case. Explain to me why.
It will be explained, but it'll be explained. But I'm like, we're not going to get anywhere, Brent. Period. You and I don't work well together in a room, because you know you have your point. I have emails where Cicero's going back to your original point, I didn't have representation. Cicero was telling me during that period of time, he was like, I am your attorney until the court appoints at that time, then I'm not. So I'm going to go back to my emails.
Okay, again, we're talking over each other, okay? And I think that perhaps Paul and Tamara can explain this and confirm what I'm saying. That is correct. The court is essentially like a guardian. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way at all.
No, I understand.
What the court does is that in case something comes up, okay, let's say that I had an arrest warrant issued for you. What the court wants is somebody basically in a protectorate role that in the event something does come up, that is, that needs an appearance in court but isn't substantive dealing with your case, then in that circumstance, Tony could step forward. The court could pick up the phone and say, hey, Tony, there's been a bond violation. Can you come in and handle the bond violation? But the understanding is that once a party files a motion to withdraw from the case, their substantive representation is stopped. That's the way I have dealt with it in every case, Mr. Higgins.
Understood.
And I'm not calling you a liar. I'm not saying that that's not what Tony is saying to you.
I'll get the email.
Mr. Higgins, listen to what I'm saying, okay? I am telling you, as a matter of federal practice, in any case, not just your case, if an attorney files a motion to withdraw, I don't have substantive dealings with them on the case.
Fair enough. Okay? I understand that. I get your point, and I'm not trying to argue your point. May I leave now, please?
Can we just wait? Indulge me. I worked very hard to get this meeting. Please let me, please allow me this.
Fair enough.
All right. We're his attorney. I'm interested in a few questions about the case, if I may.
Sure.
Okay. The way I understand it is we've got a house, Meeker Home. Was in foreclosure at the time of the insurance claim?
It's essentially under, I would call it distressed.
So there's been about 3 years of non-payment, probably longer than that, of lack of mortgage payments. There had been a foreclosure action. Essentially, they didn't file certain paperwork to perfect it.
Okay.
And so it was in between foreclosure actions.
Okay. Now, would you agree with me that this homeowner's insurance is what is known in the industry as a forced policy?
Correct.
All right. And it names Shonda Higgins and Nation Star Mortgage. Okay. Now, from what I could glean in the paperwork and the discovery, once the claim is made, Assurant determines $124,000 in damages, cuts a check in full to Nation Star.
Yes.
Okay.
However, though, that is still, one, still Assurant's money, and two, Assurant is still administering the claim.
Okay. So, help me out here. Is Assurant an agent of Nation Star?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's really two components to this. Okay.
Okay.
So you've got Assurant in terms of just the processing of the claim and the representations that are made, is issuing that money for the purpose of solely repairs. Okay?
Okay.
And what they are relying on is the representation, any number of representations. But for instance, that the contractor who's actually submitting the paperwork is actually gonna handle and process, gonna get that money, is actually going to do the work along the way.
Okay.
Another thing, they expect that if you're going to get hardwoods to fix the house, you're going to get them from, you know, if you say you're going to get them from ProSource, you're going to get them from ProSource. If you get them from somebody else, then you need to alert the insurance company to that fact, because there may be money that's due and owing back to the insurance company. All right?
Okay.
So you've got those issues. Additionally, that money also belongs to who? Not just Shonda Higgins.
But Nation Star.
Nation Star, correct. So, that is also Nation Star's money. Nation Star equally expects that the money is going to be used for repairs. If there's leftover money out of that, it's not just the insurance money, or because there's two insurers. There's Nation Star, and there's whoever the claimant is. So, the problem is that if money gets diverted, that's Nation Star's money too. It's no different than if you're in a partnership with someone and a partner abuses money in the business, okay?
Okay. Now, let's see, my next question, this is very important. I call it three checks because we've got the remedial work, $14,688.89. And then we've got two checks that issue in October and December, respectively,
correct,
for the same amount,
correct,
the $41,399. All right. Then, after that's done, then we have a supplemental.
Well, there's not additional. Let's focus on the first three. Okay. So you have the $14,000 check.
Right.
We can show that $13,000 of that went directly back to Mr. Higgins.
Okay.
Okay? So there's a video, I believe in September, where there's a $10,000 cash payment. And then there's a $3,000 payment that goes directly to Mr. Higgins, okay?
Okay.
And around those same times, there are audio recordings that he indicates he's gonna use that money to build out the new restaurant up on Main Street. So you've got that. You get the second $41,000 check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can trace at least $16,000 directly to Mr. Higgins. So there's a $5,000 check written to him. There's a $5,000 check written to Robert Davis. There's $5,000 in cash given to him, again, on recording. And then there may be like another $500 check to Leedra Boyd.
Okay.
I know that Mr. Higgins is going to dispute this, but we believe that there was about $25,000 worth of work done by United Demolition, including the demolition drywall and just other things. And there was an invoice produced for that. So that would.
You said there was an invoice produced for that?
Correct. So there was $41,000, about $41,000. We've got various recordings where there's a debate about, well, let me go to the last row. So the last row is $41,000 check.
It's in December.
In December. That check is directly deposited into Mr. Higgins' bank account. And you can trace that money down and it's not used for any of the repairs.
Okay.
So, you know, put aside the first two checks, okay?
Okay?
You know, let's say that we swing and miss on what happens on the first two checks. That last check, that $41,000, it's earmarked for repairs. Those repairs are not done, and we can show that the money funnels out. I mean, there's like trips to the 21C Museum Hotel, there's trips to San Juan, there's literally thousands of dollars in food. You ask Nation Star, you ask Assurant, did you authorize Mr. Higgins to use your funds in that manner? And the answer is no.
Okay, back to the indictment. The indictment doesn't per se identify those two checks. It does, however, mention the remedial check.
Right.
Okay. But throughout the indictment, I would... go ahead.
Okay. So, as a matter of law, we don't have to mention those other checks. So
I understand
it's part,
that.
Part and parcel of fraud. All that we list those, the remedial check, is because it was something that occurred during the course of the scheme.
Right.
So, when something gets mailed, and this is Sixth Circuit pattern jury instruction.
Right.
It's just that during the course of the scheme, something got mailed. And it itself doesn't have to be part of the fraudulent conduct. It itself does not have to be misused or diverted. It just has to be mailed during the course of the scheme. So anything that is charged as a mail count or a wire count itself need not be fraudulent or fictitious. It just has to be a natural occurrence as part of the scheme.
All right, two things. Sure. Brian, you want to leave, is that right?
I'm ready to leave,
okay.
Yeah.
With your indulgence, may I escort him down? I am interested in continuing to talk.
Okay. If I could, just a couple
of
points, and Mr. Higgins, if you don't want to hear me out, that's fine. But one is, I want to emphasize that all of us on this side, this is really just another case to us. It is no different than any other case that we work. And I have worked dozens of high-profile cases, I've worked dozens of national security cases. This is just another case. There's nothing personal in any of this for us. There are other people that were involved in this broader investigation that we didn't charge.
Nan Whaley, Shelley Dickstein, yeah.
Okay, that we didn't charge for any number of reasons. Okay?
Right.
And I guess what I'm saying is that there is nothing personal on our side about this. I get paid whether I win a case, I get paid whether I lose a case. My job is to try to get the best result for the government that I can in any particular case. And part of my job is looking at a case and sitting there and asking myself, why isn't it settling? I will tell you, from my perspective looking at this case, it should resolve. And that's just an objective fact. And I'm not suggesting that, we've got the world's greatest case or anything like that. I'm just telling you, my job is to sit down and evaluate a case and look at it. This case should resolve itself. It should sell. And simply because, given where other cases in this over umbrella of whatever have resolved, there's a place where this one should too. So that is a little bit of kind of quizzical to me. Second is, and this is just an observation, I know that Mr. Higgins has been in the restaurant business for years and is very good at what he does, and I'm sure that he, as a restaurateur, had people come into his restaurant who have really no familiarity with the restaurant business other than having seen Chopped or they've eaten at restaurants and want to come in and tell him what he needs to do with his restaurant or how to fix it, or how many times he's seen someone who has no experience in the field come in and try to open their own restaurant.
That was me, by the way.
All right.
That was me.
But you've learned over the years.
Clearly.
You've learned through trial and error, and I guess where I'm going with this is that there are a lot of people that have expertise about the law, what crimes look like, and it's, trying to, much like an experienced restaurateur, trying to give advice to a novice. The novice may not always see it, they may not always get it, but the people with experience are trying to help. And you may not believe it, Mr. Higgins, part of my job is to try to make sure that this case doesn't spin out of control. And what I see happening, and I say this not as braggadocio, because anything can happen when a case goes to trial, I firmly believe that you will be convicted and that you are going to receive a prison sentence. And
up to 82 years.
Well, you're never going to get 82 years.
I mean, that's what we talked about in here.
Well, hold on. That's the stat maxes, okay? And the guidelines are what drive this. And we've talked about the guidelines, and I've gone over the guidelines. In here, okay?
So 6 years. I'm facing six to 10 years.
That's correct.
Fair enough.
And I guess it pains me that we can't sit down and try to talk through this and resolve this case in a way that doesn't put you in that position. I honestly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, Mr. Higgins, I don't understand the animosity. I don't understand the unwillingness to sit and just talk about facts of the case. Put aside the you know, you wanting the meeting, you wanting the, I will tell you, the bank records kind of tell the story in this case. And I'm happy to sit down and talk with you and to talk with your attorneys and try to work this through. I guess what I find from where I'm sitting is that you want to talk about things that maybe at the
children. That's all I want to talk about is the children. Well, that's what I'm in here for. I'm not if these two wonderful human beings can't figure out whether or not I committed a crime, and if I did and I'm convicted and I do 10 years, then so I am here to talk about the children. That's it. That's all I wanted to talk about. I'm here to get my meeting that was assured to me on January 21st.
Well,
and now you're saying...
First of all, no one assured you a meeting.
Yeah, they...
Hold on. You said you would reach out to Chicago.
That's not what how it was. We were asked, did we want to go to Chicago or do we want Chicago to come down to Dayton? That was the question. Then Cicero and I look at each other and we're like, Chicago, Dayton, we can go...
Okay, Mr. Higgins, let me ask you this. And again, I'm trying to be straight with you, is... If you are able to bare your chest about all of this, does that advance the ball at all in this case of trying
Absolutely.
To resolve this case?
What was I doing on Clow Road at 7:30 in the morning?
Hold on though. How will it help advance the ball?
The children. I want to talk about the children. What was I doing?
Hold on. I understand that you want to talk about the children. Okay. Let's say we do that. Where does this case go then?
We've got problems. It depends, because January the 11th, we got big problems. I mean, like, there's a lot more stuff. Talking about $25,000, $3,000 check, not that it bores me, but I've got two attorneys that are more than capable. And like I've told you, Ms. Sack, if I'm guilty, a jury's going to find me guilty. If I'm guilty, a jury's going to find me guilty. When I went to Clower Road on April the 10th, and Special Agent Andrew Gregan calling me on my cell phone, blowing me up, Mr. Higgins, can you please come in? We got guys from Chicago to interview you at 7:30 in the morning. And I get to Clower Road at 7:30 in the morning with 3,000 pages banker records and then I get shackled. Then the agents actually help Mike Wright load the documents in the vehicle.
Okay, so then
when I do a FOIA request to get the camera, because I want the camera of me walking in at 7:30 in the morning, I get a response back from DC saying we can't identify the arresting agency. So therefore your case is closed.
Okay.
Then 3 days later, we're gonna reopen your case.
Mr. Higgins, again. This doesn't have to do with
Absolutely, it does. Why did Andrew Gregan make the meeting with me on April the 30th at 7:30?
Because FBI didn't want to arrest you at your house.
Why not?
Because
you arrest everybody else at their house.
No one knew where you lived.
Come on, you're the FBI. Come, right. Can I please leave? I can't entertain this. This is no good.
Is it okay if I just take him downstairs and come back?
You can walk out of the building, though.
Okay, okay, I'll do.
I'm good, I'm good. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. What's up? You doing all right?
Yes, sir.